Well, hey there. Welcome to The Real Podcast, hosted by Jason Kaliba. We think that real people are interesting, not just celebrities and superstars, but also the guy standing in line next to you at the grocery store and the kid beside you in church. We're passionate about sharing the stories and insights of those people, real people, so that you're challenged and maybe even inspired to grow. If you'd like additional resources or more information about our guests, check out our webpage at cochranalliance.com/real. So, let's get real.
All right, here we go. I grew up in a home raised by a pastor's wife. That's because my dad was a pastor. And my dad himself grew up in a home where he was raised by a pastor's wife because his dad was a pastor. So my grandmother was a pastor. No, she wasn't a pastor. She was a pastor's wife. And so was my mom. And then when I felt called into ministry, even before I got into it, I decided to marry a girl who, by default of marrying me, became a pastor's wife as well. And for those who are listening, there is, at least in the evangelical church world, a whole subculture, a myth, a certain mold of which many pastors' wives, I'm sure, have felt that they should belong to, or they join the club when they marry someone who is in the ministry. And so ever since I began this this podcast, I thought it would be interesting at some point to explore the life and the calling of serving as a spouse of someone who is a pastor. Maybe I'm interested in it because I'm the person who's married to one of these people. So it is my privilege, rather than trying to tell you what I think, it's my privilege to be joined by three women who have been or are currently married to pastors. So I want to welcome my wife, Cindy Kaliba.
Yay!
Cheryl Buchanan. And
yay!
That's right.
And last but not least, Sue Smith, who all have something to say on this topic. And so, yeah. Sue, maybe I'll start with you. Maybe just tell us a little bit about who you are. And a few of the things that keep you busy these days.
Thanks, Jason. It's really cool to get to do this and look at our lives. I love chocolate.
Nice.
And my girlfriends and my life in Alberta. I am a wife. My husband and I have been married 25 years.
Wow.
This summer. Pretty special. I have four grown kids, one in grade 12 and three who are in college. And this is a really exciting season of life with them.
Wow.
My first one to get married soon. So
right on.
I'm in the throes of planning a wedding and helping them. I'm in the throes of helping launch my kids. And then my job right now is, my paid job is a registrar at our seminary college here in Cochrane. And my other job is the volunteer mobilization coach for our church. So
okay.
That's kind of how I fill my days.
Okay. And for those who don't get to see you right now, what church are you connected to?
I am a part of Bow Valley Baptist Church in Cochrane.
Okay.
And my family have been there 3 years.
Okay. Cheryl, you're next. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay. My name is Cheryl Buchanan. I'm not married to a pastor anymore.
Right.
But
you're
an ex-pastor's wife.
In recovery.
I was a pastor's wife for 24 years, all of those years in British Columbia, 18 on Vancouver Island, which was very dear to my heart. I said I didn't want to do that.
You started it off that way. It's going to be hard, Cheryl.
Yeah. Currently, what keeps me busy is I'm a spiritual director. So I meet one-on-one with people who want to explore their spiritual lives and grow in discernment and know what God's heart is for them and where they're going. So that's what I would call a day job. I do some teaching. My husband's a professor at Ambrose Seminary, and so I get the privilege of speaking in different classes there. And this fall, I get to teach my first full course.
Oh, congratulations.
On prayer and life, living a life of prayer. So I'm very excited about that. But probably the biggest love of my heart is working and walking with our Indigenous peoples in both BC and in Alberta.
Okay.
And have very dear friends both in the Stoney Nakoda Nation and in Tsuut'ina Nation. So,
okay. Yeah. Thank you. Welcome. Mm-hmm. Cindy, tell us a little bit about who you are.
I'm a pastor's wife. But actually, I wouldn't say that's not my solo way that I look at myself, but it is a big piece. I'm a mom of four girls, 8, 10, 13, and 15 right now. So we have a busy house, lots going on. I have a business at home. I work about 15 to 25 hours a week at home. I love being able to have the flexibility to be at home with my girls. I love our neighborhood, so I'm on the board of our community association. And I'm just recently learning about leisure and playtime, so I've just started playing volleyball again after many years. So just one night a week, but that's been a really fun part of what I've been doing the last year. That's a little bit about me.
Okay, and you're connected to the Cochrane Alliance community and have been involved in this church. How many years now?
I'm married to you. And we have been here for, we're married 22 years this summer. And all of those but two have been within this community. So I have a huge heart for Cochrane and for, the Cochrane Alliance family, and have experienced they're just a big part of my journey. Yeah.
Okay. So Cindy, I'm going to start with you.
Sure.
Since we're exploring this topic of being married to a pastor, when you were growing up, when you thought maybe someday you might be married, did you ever imagine or hope that you would marry a pastor?
No. Well, I had that conversation with my mom and dad maybe 6 months ago. I said, I don't remember having career aspirations really. And they said, as they talked to me and they tried to filter what my gifts and strengths were, that I really had no desire for a specific career. But they always kind of jokingly said to me, I think you'll marry a missionary or you'll marry a pastor because your skill set is with people and just loving people and serving people. And I had a lot of experience with camp ministry and different ministries and Bible school and stuff. So it was never my dream to marry or something I pursued. But then you came along, Jay, and you were just too good. had all the things on my list so it wasn't something that I definitely was aiming for or thinking I want that as my, it wasn't my calling. I didn't feel until I married you. But okay, that's how it rolled out.
How about you, Cheryl? How did you come into this, kicking and screaming? Or
well, I forgot to say in my introduction, I have three adult children. Mm. We've been married coming up 35 years.
Wow.
This mm-hmm. coming year. So, to answer that question, I didn't even know what a pastor was until I was a young adult. I didn't even know a pastor's wife was a thing.
Wow, there you go.
And I was married for 4 years before my husband got a literal phone call saying, hey, do you want to come and be a youth pastor at our church?
Mm. Wow.
And my response to him when he told me that was, you can't be a pastor. They're holy people. We were brand new Christians at that time. And really was not on my radar. I found out years later, all my friends were praying fervently as teenagers and young adults that God would not let them marry a pastor. And I said, no one gave me that memo. I didn't know that was a thing.
That's great.
So as you found that out, and obviously as Mark said yes to that and it progressed, did it feel natural to progress into that, or it came with some bumps?
Well, His response when I said he couldn't do that because pastors are holy people was, don't worry, it's a 1-year position and then I'll get a real job.
I see.
Because he wanted to teach at a university. Mm-hmm. And so one year turned into 24 years and then he got his real job. But he fought it for 10 years. I'm not a pastor. And yet he was definitely called and gifted and amazing at it.
So. Okay.
But for me, I didn't feel like I had any of the qualifications for a pastor's wife. I didn't even know what the qualifications were.
Where's and the job description?
Yeah. So it was a steep learning curve and a gracious congregations.
Okay. Yeah. Sue, tell us a little bit about that and how you connected with Gary and when it dawned on you.
I had a call on my life at 16 to be a missionary. And
okay.
I was headed to Europe. And so I lived everything, college and even into graduate school, ready to do missions. And
okay.
so little did I know that Gary and I, when we met, we met as friends. And he was called to be a pastor, and he said a traveling evangelist. And so my expectation of God was that you've called me to this, so I have to marry someone who's also called. So I wasn't going to be okay to marry someone who wasn't called to ministry, because that's what I was going to do. So I actually, my dad and my friends checked him out to make sure he had a call to ministry, because I was preparing my life for that.
Okay.
So we
was that like a screening interview or the rack or
I
what?
I think it really felt like that. Like, I lost some boyfriends over this moment. Well, this is what I'm going to do.
Okay.
And you're not headed that way.
Mm. Yeah.
So as it unfolded, what I didn't know was, we did missions. We did all the different kinds of things you do in ministry before he became a pastor of one group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was great because we were doing it together.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the first time he became the pastor, all of a sudden that was his role. And I had to figure out, okay, what's this mean for me? Because I'm not that. I am now his supporter. Mm. So I love being a pastor's wife. I love being in ministry. The challenge for me probably was getting okay with not being in it just because that's my calling and not ours.
Okay.
So.
We need to revisit that.
Yeah.
Maybe just tell us, aside from church ministry, what kinds of things have you and Gary done together? What other ministries are there that you've done?
Our primary ministry together has been church planting.
Okay.
So church planting by being the starters of churches in Quebec and Manitoba and Ontario, which was incredible.
Yeah.
And those roll into pastoring, but you start church planting. And our other primary thing is being leaders in our denomination to help other people plant churches.
Okay.
And then there's youth ministry and all kinds of things along the way. But that whole church planting, starting kind of missionary life was ours.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we need to get kind of one of the major questions that have been on many church board interviews of the pastor's wife, and that is this. Do you play the piano?
No.
Oh, okay.
The cymbals, but the tambourine.
Okay.
They don't ever ask you that.
I didn't know that Baptist churches allow tambourines.
They don't. It's a problem for me. I got the question often asked, but like two situations.
It seriously has been asked of you?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And I was very comfortable saying no, but I can do other things.
That's right.
Okay. Cheryl?
No, I can't even sing a note on tune. So.
I love it.
And I know the answer to the next person here.
Yes, I do. I do play. But I know I'm not the perfect church player because I grew up with Royal Conservatory, learning the reed music. So when I came and I did worship team, I really didn't know a lot about chording and stuff. And I would say I'm probably not very gifted. I'm a good hard worker, so I can learn notes, but I'm not really a great pastor's wife, church piano player. Nope. Okay. I would have a fail on that one.
So, Cindy, can you tell me a little bit about the beginning of in the first years of being associated with me? What was it like going and hearing Sue's comments? I hear a little bit of an echo, but not to spoil it. Tell me about some of the first years of us moving here and you being now a pastor's wife.
Yeah, so I relate to Sue in that I don't know if I wouldn't have a time where there was a calling that I would remember, but I definitely was given by my folks and built into by a lot of coaches and, you know, ministry leaders into my leadership and into my ministry. And I had a lot of ministry on my own, which I loved and thrived in. And then, you know, I finished Bible school and had a degree just like you. But suddenly you were hired and I wasn't. And I guess that didn't really play in my mind. I didn't understand that effect until that first year when suddenly you were being recognized and you had the title and you got the paycheck and it was your calling, your role. And I was trying to kind of go, where do I fit? And so it really caused conflict in our marriage in the first year, where I had kind of little explosions almost like, and I call it my identity crisis. You know, I'm like, I was trying to figure out, how do I do ministry? How do I not just be a back, because my nature is not a background supporter. I feel like a lot of our giftings are similar and I am a leader. And so I had to, it came to a place once where you said, you know what? It's all good. If this is too hard for you, I will resign. I will. And that's, you're more important. Our marriage is our first commitment. And I went, oh, okay, well, it's not that big of a deal. It's like, I'm kind of overplaying this. Obviously I got to figure it out. So it was just it's a series of just kind of working that out and figuring out where my role was. And a few years later, I found kind of a business and learned to have something of my own where I could have leader. And then I could figure out how I could work and lead within the church. But we very much did ministry those first 5 years together. Youth ministry, it's just figuring out, okay, it was okay for me not to have the title. It was okay for me not to be, you know, just get coming to sorts with that and just going, okay, my identity is the pastor's wife and I don't have all those things, but I do lead in my own way. And so it was kind of a process for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Sue, there are some similarities. What's same, what's different or unique about your own journey?
It's amazing how you grow up into this role and you grow up into your security in who you are, and it doesn't need a recognition or a name or invitation to the meeting or things like that. I also think that for us, I was questioning God. You give us leadership gifts and then you don't give us the chance to use them. Well, that was my thing. Like, why would you give me this if I can't use it? What God showed me was the leadership is servant leadership behind the scenes, even without recognition. And there, the value and worth I need isn't in what I get from leading. It's what impact I'm going to have. So that became to support Gary and to serve along with him, but serve him and find joy in it. And my kids, like, to be a mom was as much a ministry and leadership in their lives that I didn't have to do what I had trained to do to feel like I was being fulfilled. So I found other ways, just like you, to make sure that I was in the game and I was fully doing what God had asked me to do. And
in those contexts where you had planted and been planters together and then it got more formal, did people look at you different once it got more formal than they did when it was just kind of, hey, we're meeting in our house or wherever as a church plant?
Oh, that's a great question, because this being a church planter's wife is a whole nother podcast. As you work your tail off.
Oh, yeah.
And it is different. And I'm sure this is another question, but I am me no matter which role I was. I'm just me. And so I don't feel like I changed. They didn't see me any different. They still talked about Gary behind my back or with me or whatever. That there was still this comfort and trust that they could say things and I was going to be who I was. And so, yeah, it didn't impact my relationships and the title they gave me.
Okay.
That was just me.
So let me jump off that. If you each were evaluating and saying, these are my gifts, this is what I bring to the church or the people around me, what would you say are your spiritual gifts or your what it is that you bring to the world that God has called you to? In a few words.
In a few words. Oh, really good, Jay.
yeah, that wasn't on the list.
My gifts, 1, 2, 3, are... well, I would say... I love to coach and mentor and walk alongside people. I love to lead and to speak. I don't know.
That's good.
That would be mainly my.
I would say my primary gift is prayer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that was. That came pretty much my first week as being a pastor's wife.
Okay.
Because I didn't play the piano. I didn't particularly like children until I had my own. And I had no experience, really, other than we had done a number of years of youth ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So back up a bit. Mark and I became Christians together when we were dating.
Okay.
And the week we became Christians, we had been attending a church trying to figure out what this was all about.
Okay.
Asked Jesus into our hearts together, walked into the church the next Sunday and announced to the pastor we became Christians that week and now we wanted to be youth leaders.
I see.
And he said, that's fantastic.
Wow.
And so we started in ministry together.
Cool.
Yeah, our very first week of being Christians.
Okay.
And so that was a steep learning curve.
Hmm. And did that turn into the same church that asked you to come formally?
No.
Okay. Okay. No.
But that was where we got involved in youth ministry together. But stepping into as a pastor's wife, I thought I had to learn how to pray. So I picked up a little book, read it, What Happens When Women Pray, and was blown away. Hmm. Oh my gosh, prayer works.
Okay.
I want to know about this. Hmm. And so I've dedicated my life to learning and practicing every form of prayer.
Wow. Hmm. So how did that, in those early years, how did it, did you take prayer requests? Did you meet with people? And what was the form of which you said, I got to pray?
Yeah. Well, right after we took that first position was in Vernon, British Columbia. I started having babies. So anybody that has kids knows you know how to pray because you have absolutely no resources on how to do that. But was then involved in a mom's group, and so weekly getting together with other moms and doing Bible study, praying together. Mm. And it wasn't till we actually moved to Duncan that God opened up opportunities to learn and to grow in particularly intercessory prayer.
Mm.
And so that was my focus and read every book there was and started a significant prayer ministry in the church. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. So, Sue, I'll jump back in. If you would evaluate what are your giftings or what is it that you bring to the table, what would you say?
God graciously has given me the gift of administration to organize, to take something and build a team and motivate people. And so that's what I do now. That's my strongest thing. It's the thing I get to do the most. Exhortation is a gift that God consistently seems to use and give me opportunity to express, to use scripture to encourage people.
Mm-hmm.
And those two tend to be most active in our ministry and in my friendships.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe before I ask you more questions about your being a spouse, let me offer you a chance to make evaluations of your husbands. How do you think the role of pastor has shaped or affected or detracted him? Do you think that being a pastor made or is making him a better man, or where do you see it taking its toll? Or how would you answer that?
Cindy? Gray hair, more wrinkles. No, I would say absolutely, because anywhere where you have an opportunity as a pastor to be stretched a lot and to be put in situations that are tough and that there's intense conflict or the stakes are high with your decisions. So in that, you either choose to grow or you give up, right? So most, at least what I've experienced is that in those tough times, God really changes you and grows you. I also think there's some built-in things, like as a pastor, I know we get to experience once a year going to a pastor's conference where you are spoken into. I think you've had some good mentors around you. You've had different courses that you've taken or seasons of intentional growth, right? Or so I do feel that it has grown us a lot through the tough times and through the opportunities like that, and through just being surrounded by great people mm-hmm. who are praying for you and mm-hmm. lifting you up. And I think that is a good thing, and that in my experience you are growing and changing in good ways from the good and the bad and all of it. Yeah. So.
Okay. So that's on me.
That's on
ladies,
you.
Your husbands aren't in the room here. So.
That's right.
Yeah, I would say definitely. Mark's always been incredibly self-disciplined. So whether it's physically or studying, he's a natural learner, and when he decides to do something, he's going to do it. So I have no doubt that whatever he set his mind to, he was going to thrive in. But being a pastor, I think, and he did, he fought it for 10 years. He did. Felt that wasn't who he was. And then pretty much at the 10-year mark, he surrendered. We were talking one night, and he's also an author, and he wanted desperately to be a published author. Mm-hmm. And he was writing for all those years, and nothing would be published. Just little articles here and there, but nothing significant. And at the 10-year mark of pastoring, one night he actually said, you know what? I'm a pastor. I will always be a pastor. And if God adds anything else, that'll be a bonus. But I'm a pastor first. And it was within weeks of that he won first place in a writing contest for Christianity Today, and he had agents and publishers calling him asking for anything else. And so so being a pastor for him, I think, has taught him that surrendering his life to the Lord. On our baptismal day, his verse that was given to him was, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. And he has lived that scripture, and still to this day it's kingdom first. Kingdom first, and God's added so much to us.
Cool. Thank you.
Gary is a visionary leader, he doesn't fit in the box of a pastor. So he's had to figure out how to be who he is and have this title of pastor. So he would say, I know he would say, it is challenging for him, because the expectations of a pastor, you're managing, you're caring, you're shepherding. And he can do those things, and he does them well, but that is not his strength. Those okay. are things you do because you need to. So he bumps the edges of being confined to that. So it's been challenging and incredible to watch him take who he is and bless the body of Christ with it, like visionary things, trying things no one's tried before, yeah. developing things that somebody said couldn't be done. And mm-hmm. And then along the way, trying to do the things that pastors have to mm-hmm. do to organize and mm-hmm. to maintain and do budgets, which are killers. and yeah. and all the shepherding, caring things that are needed. He does those really, really well. But he doesn't see it because they aren't natural. They're mm-hmm. things that are, you do it because that's what you need to do in that role, right? Mm-hmm. But so... I think he's an incredible pastor, but he has to be himself in it. And so as soon as he feels confined, then we all start to wonder what's going to happen. Mm. How's he going to express who he is and change the way people, you know, define the role. But he's our family love him being a pastor because we see the potential of what he can do for the church.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Cheryl, how about your kids? As you've evaluated kind of the effect mm-hmm. of being in this role together, as you've heard them now as adults make some evaluatory comments of the impact of growing up in your home, what would you say the effect has been on them?
My son always loved being the pastor's son. Oh. He thrived in any sort of limelight that he could stand in. <Yep. laughs> And so he very much enjoyed his place. Maybe some of the later teen years wasn't so cool with it. But
okay.
the girls, on the other hand, not so much. When they were younger, they enjoyed it. But as they got older, they didn't really appreciate. We lived in a very small town,
yeah.
and we had a fairly large church, and my husband was very well known throughout the community, and so they felt they felt a little extra pressure that they had to toe the line. I probably wasn't the greatest help in that, wanting to polish them up a little bit. But I don't think they've been scarred too badly.
Okay.
We
okay.
did tell them we would pay for any counseling they needed.
Good one.
And I know sometimes people talk about expectation or put on them, and you know I don't have many stories myself of being one of those kids. But do you have any recollections of people saying or doing something to your kids that wasn't cool?
Yeah. The girls in particular, they, even if it was well-meaning, or they felt pressure.
Okay.
They did.
Sue?
Right.
I asked my kids earlier night and today, what would you say if Jason asked you this question? They were quick to say it's weird when everyone knows you and you have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
And they said, like, people know things about you and you really don't know them. It's not necessarily negative. It's just, it was an observation for them. Yeah. They love their dad being a pastor, actually consistently, because he always tries to include them. It is ours as a family, never just dad's. So they, that's their perspective on even now. It is theirs. It's ours. Having said that, they feel the pressure of having to be at things or do things simply because it's ours, when they actually don't want to show up or don't want to serve this time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a real thing for them, is not having to do it just because of what he does. The other thing they mentioned is when the expectations come, they said they value that they've learned to be honest and real and not live up to them.
Okay.
Not that they're trying to rebel, but a couple of them said the openness and honesty we've given them to be who they are and not have to be somebody else has freed them to be okay with that. And so that's not very clear the way I said it, other than it's been valued by them that in our family they can be who they are, say what they want to say,
okay,
without feeling like they have to put on a face or mm-hmm. be something
live
more.
Up to certain stereotype.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So our kids are a little younger, so the jury's really still out on the effect here, Cindy. But what's your thoughts right now? What are our kids saying?
Oh, our kids are fine. I do have a story, not even necessarily related to pastors' kids, but faith, Christian kids. On our way to church one day, they're like, man, if we weren't Christians, we would have so much time. Because, like, we go to church every Sunday. And, I mean, as a pastor's kid, you are going to church more. That a lot of people go, you know, 2-3 times a month, every Sunday mostly. And they're like, we go to Awana, we go to youth group, we show up and we're serving. Dad does extra meetings. We go to Momentum on Tuesdays. And they're like, think of all the time we would have. So, and they do, piggybacking on Sue, they do feel like every Sunday we're almost the last to leave,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And they've had a few experiences visiting churches, and they're like, that was awesome. We just left. Yes. No one knew us. It was great.
For the first out.
Yeah. So, but I think, the jury is, we don't know. But so far, we haven't read any pressures, and it's, I've just tried to embrace, you know, I love the church. Here's all the good things about it. Mm-hmm. And here's how we can serve and try to keep it positive. So so far I'm not seeing any huge effects, but that's a good idea to pay for their counseling. I like that. I like that. That's good.
And we did have lots of conversations with them because they did feel that time mm-hmm. thing,
yeah.
especially 2 Sunday mornings.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
When are we ever going to get mm-hmm. out of here kind mm-hmm. of thing. But we also talked about the benefits, and we mm-hmm. had people that gave us mm-hmm. so much stuff mm-hmm. or offered us cabins or
mm-hmm. yeah.
boat trips or
what?
Oh, we're living in the wrong place.
Yeah, no, when you live on the island and boats, yeah, totally. Everyone has boats.
Yeah, right? Totally.
Except the pastor.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, can I mention one thing?
Yeah.
What I'm learning, my kids need me more as teenagers and young adults almost than they did when they were little.
Hmm.
So they can almost be okay that dad's busy and dad's doing his thing, but I have watched them need me and need my presence and need me not to be busy, mm-hmm. which is a killer because mm-hmm. I love to be involved.
Yeah.
But it's huge for them if I'm not also at that meeting.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
So there's probably some regrets of wish I would have slowed down or stopped or said no more to some of the things that I thought I needed to be doing. But I know they would like me to be their mom, not the pastor's wife.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. That's good.
I don't know if any of you can answer this question, but certainly in the evangelical world, there are more women, maybe not enough women, that are getting involved in pastoral roles. And so there are more pastors' husbands out there than probably there would have been 20, 30, certainly 40, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. Do you think that these identity things that we've touched on a little bit about being associated with their wife is real for them? Or this is a unique gender thing that goes along with the male-female dynamic? I don't have an answer to that. I was curious. Do you have any mm-hmm. thoughts?
I don't know. Like we've had a few pastors' husbands for sure, and I've had good conversations, but I don't think it has the same realm because they come with their full-time job, and I would think that still they're the main, you know, the main earner, the main So I don't know. The ones I know have been really comfortable with it and really happy to support their wives and don't feel the same. Traditionally that has mm-hmm. been for the pastor's mm-hmm. wives, but I don't know enough. Probably I only know a few. So,
yeah, I would agree with you because generally they have mm-hmm. their own calling, position, mm-hmm. job. Mm-hmm. I have been at some pastors and spouses events where they'll say pastors and wife, and some men will put their hands on their hips and say, I'm not a wife. But mostly it's done in fun. I don't think there's that kind of pressure.
I served on staff at Bow Valley before Gary became the pastor. I was a leader in volunteer mobilization. So I was very part-time. However, I had all the responsibility and the time in the meetings, and he was doing his own job in ministry, but in the city and not in a local church. Like he wasn't. So he's just attending Bow Valley. But I was on the stage. I was doing stuff. And there were moments where it was awkward for him because he didn't have a role, and yet I was busy, and I'd go out and have meetings, and so it became awkward, but I don't know that because he was a husband of a leader. I think it's just, what do we do when we're both not doing it? It was a marriage moment more than anything else. How do we complement each other and let each other have their thing?
So this podcast is called Real, and seeking to just have people talk about their real experience. One of the hazards of being in a public role where people are watching you, and I think rightly so, scripture seems to be, has some straightforward things to say to leadership about the tone of their lives and how they got to give an account for how their influence is. But have you found that you were or are able to be real with people, or is there a certain isolation? Some people involved in ministry have talked about a certain loneliness in leadership. What's been your experience of being real and authentic with people?
Well, I'm always jumping in here, but I do have a story that's good. I feel like very early on, so we were youth pastors for 5 years. We went away, and then we ended up coming back to Cochrane, and Jason was associate, and I remember you speaking one day and then hearing that someone had made a comment like, at least he could iron his pants, like something like that, right? And I was like all enraged, and it was a great moment because I was like, oh yeah, right, like leadership, of course, leadership is just open to criticism, and that's normal. Like, and so it was that at that point, because of that moment or that story, that we decided, doesn't matter what people think or what others' perceptions are, because when you're in leadership, people will form perceptions. They'll create story to help form their reality or support their feelings or whatever. But it was most important what we felt was right to do, what God wanted us to do. And I think that was helpful for me to just continue to practice or build my muscle at, you know what, I'm just going to be me. And if people want to ask me stuff, I'm open. But there's enough people that love me for who I am, and there's freedom to just be me for who I am. And so for the most part, I don't think, since that moment, I think I've just practiced, you know, if there's times when I start thinking, oh, what will they think? Oh, doesn't matter. I'm just going to relax and be myself. Mm-hmm. And that's good. And God says that's enough. And I know that's enough for you. And so that's how I've kind of settled it. And I just choose to go, oh, people like me, or, you know, like just focus on the authentic people that I have really good relationship with. Yeah. So, and open to whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say pretty much the same thing, because I didn't grow up in the church. I had no
baggage.
Yeah. I'll say the word.
That's great. Yep.
Actually had such naivety coming into our first week in youth ministry. And I remember looking at these kids, and I was 19, had just sort of come through rebellious teenage years. And I looked at these kids and I said, oh, it must be so amazing to not have to struggle with drinking or drugs or sex, because you got Jesus. And they all sort of looked at me like I was crazy. So I was really naive. But we have always had very close friends in the church, and I was the same. I thought, you know, God loves me, and my close friends love me. So if you don't like me, that's something wrong with you, because I'm really a nice person. And, you know, mm-hmm. Church is not always easy, and there are those people that mm-hmm. want to form their own particular biases or opinions of you, and you got to just learn to mm-hmm. to not let those take you down.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a female reality, trying right. to, no matter who you are, like, please people and be liked and be affirmed. And I had incredible mentors who were pastors' wives and church planters' mm-hmm. wives, and they really were incredible at early on setting me free to just be me. And it's amazing the response you get when you open and honest. For example, mm-hmm. With girlfriends in church life, in my small group, I'll just tell them what we just argued about or the struggle we're having, and they're so relieved to find mm-hmm. that, oh, you do that too? You and Gary aren't perfect? No.
Yeah.
And for so I think when you watch people be relieved to hear mm-hmm. you just be real and mm-hmm. authentic, it frees you to realize with discretion you just are. And mm-hmm. so I really love shocking people and telling them things that are just yep. real, because yes. it brings their walls down, and friendships are richer when you're real. Mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. probably early on got really tired of not having close friends because I felt like I had to watch my words and watch my attitude. And so as I learned how to be real, I got more friendships that were richer because I wasn't fake. We were really sharing real stuff versus a mask. So, so yeah, I think my church family knows that who I am is who they get, and they're going to see us in all stages, and I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything, and here's your chance, is there anything that you wish people knew about you that maybe they didn't assume at the start? And I know, Cheryl, that it's a little bit different in that you're still in a public role, but maybe not in the same way like a local congregation. So maybe you want to answer in the past, but what do you wish people knew about you?
I didn't, nothing came to mind when I saw that question. So I just think I think it's good to say, if you have questions, feel free to ask me, because I have nothing to hide, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, there is tough things, and that some of those things you can't share, but there's lots of great things. So there's nothing really about me that I wish people knew.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one question I couldn't answer.
All right.
I couldn't come up with anything.
Okay.
You know, sometimes there are people who ask you questions and you get the chance to share your life, but there's a whole lot of people who never ask you anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish, I think I long for friendships where it's give both ways. And so probably people don't know that about me, that I, as much as I love to give and build great friendships, I actually really like someone to do that for me. Like it's consistent sometimes that when you're strong and they think you have it all together and that you're there to give to them. So I don't think very many people know how much I would love to be invited. I would love to be the one included, or versus the one hosting the party or bringing everybody together. I would love to be included and invited just as me, not because
just
I'm,
as Sue.
You know, Gary's wife or a leader. And I think when something's so important to you, like friendships, right? It's a special thing when people know what you like, what you enjoy, what treat would be fun for you, you know?
Chocolate.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that people will be surprised to find out that I'm not lonely. I haven't really ever been really lonely in ministry, because I'm an extrovert and I can find friends. But I give to them versus maybe them giving to me. And so, yeah.
Okay. Do you have like your funniest pastoral moment, pastors? I'm not sure, but if you look back into your time as being as being in the church, serving the church. And when you just look back on it now, and it's funny, I don't know, Cheryl, if you're going to write your book, but I've got a couple stories in my mind that if I ever write one, those stories will definitely be included.
I do know. Well, this is very small one, but I was sitting in church and I was super pregnant with our third, and I have I just had very little filter when I was super pregnant, super tired. So I said some things one time. I remember I had to apologize for it at a meeting. I wasn't sensitive.
And I've had those too.
I would take that one back. But this one, it was just a funny one. It was a friend of mine now came, and it was her first Sunday at church, and she happened to be sitting beside me. And she's like, "Who's speaking this? You know, who is he?" And I was like, "I don't know, but he's really good looking." And it was you speaking. She had no idea I was married to him or anything. And it was her first Sunday. And I don't know. It didn't happen that she got figured out until later. And she was thought that was the most funny thing that I, as the pastor's wife, was just so, like, you know,
admiring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I couldn't think of anything else for a funny moment. Yeah.
I have issues not falling asleep during Gary's messages. I can get very tired, and they can be really good, but it's a really good nap.
Yeah, I love
because
it.
I'm tired. So I sat down, and my daughter's like, "Mom." So Gary, after he sees me, he sees everything, right? So he's like, "How was my message today?" "Oh, it was so good."
"What was it about?"
Jesus. And my nap.
That's awesome.
So that's a running joke in the house. Mm-hmm. That was my nap today.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I haven't heard of that before.
I love it.
Yeah.
Have any confessions?
Yeah.
I thought of a few, but most of them I probably can't say
loud.
Yeah. But I had a good one once. I was in a grocery store, and a woman from our church saw me there, and her mom was visiting from out of town. So she introduced me as one of the pastor's wives. And the mom looked sort of shocked and then said, "How many wives does he have?"
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really good.
Yeah, well, that fits a certain mold that people have as well.
That's really good.
Oh, that's good.
I love it.
How about the flip side? You know, we're laughing, but there are things about the church that make anybody mad. Is there anything I'm not necessarily saying a particular congregation, but maybe the church, big C in general. Is there something, stuff that makes you mad?
Yeah, there is.
We're all angry. We're just
that's
all really
right.
angry. Hiding behind a mask of
that's
sweet.
Right.
What made me mad most often in the church was when we didn't take seriously that we have an enemy who hates us, and he uses deception and disunity, and he uses the same things over and over again, and we fall prey to them. And so to watch disunity, to watch people that once loved each other and respected and honored, and just break down into petty things would make me really angry. And when churches don't take seriously the power of prayer and the power of God to do immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine, when it's all
safe,
safe, and we're just living in the physical realm and not paying attention to what's going on in the spiritual realm. And whenever you try to actually move people to that, they think you're a little bit crazy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it aligns with your giftings, right? I think where what often you're similar is often what bugs you about your spouse or whatever, right? Yeah. And so for me, because I'm a server, a doer, and you know, I'm involved in a lot of things. Sometimes I just get mad about the 80-20, how there's so few people who will just, you know, open your house every Sunday and have people in, or once a month, or just, you don't have to be perfect. Just do it, you know, or you're not perfect with kids, but you might, if just try it, like just get out there. So I wish sometimes, there'd be more of us, that would just jump in and really start serving and seeing where their gifts are and, you know, do it that way. Because I just feel that sometimes the 20% get tired, and I feel that, and it you know, makes me sad that more people won't commit and, you know, just really give to the family, you know, so that sometimes makes me sad and or mad. Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. Good answers. I think the only one that I would add is when there's disrespect, I don't do well with disrespect. When like when someone's words tell things that aren't theirs to tell, or speak against Gary or another leader or their own husband or leader, and it's just they've crossed the line of of speaking disrespectful and feeling like they have the right to express themselves, and their opinion is what it feels like, but really it's disrespectful, and I don't do very well with that one. I can feel it deep down inside, the need to defend, and Gary will say, that's why I didn't tell you.
Yeah.
I know. Don't react. Just yeah. So whether it's him, so he often doesn't tell me what he hears or what he knows, because I don't do well with that one. I it's hard for me to forget and forgive or look beyond what was said. Especially when believers just let like a little bit of deception, they feel like they have the right, or they can just express themselves without a filter, without caution or care of how it may hurt or bring healing or redemption versus pain. So
what about on the flip side of that, do you have a time that you would say, when this happened, I think I saw the church at her best?
Yes, because the exact flip side, leaders are speaking out, not necessarily at Bow Valley, but in our past, they'll speak out against a leader or a pastor, but someone says, no, this is not right. Yeah. And the other people come and ask forgiveness or confess. We said this, we were wrong. Yeah. And so to watch why God set that up anyways, right, is for... Yeah. To follow, to receive correction and make amends and ask forgiveness. And so to watch people do that once they realize they were wrong. I have seen that just as much as the opposite.
I always think the church, we do amazing in crisis, right? Like when somebody passes away or there's some real need, man, you see people rise up and surround and love and pray. And I'm always amazed at the support that comes together. Or when there's a special call for, you know, for a certain ministry to go through that's new and different sometimes. Sometimes it's amazing to see everyone who maybe been hesitant before get up and go, okay, I'm in, how can I be used now? So yeah, I like that.
Yeah, when I was reflecting on this question, I got really emotional as I remembered so many times I saw the church at its best. And where we were in Duncan, we were in a community that had a lot of need. And we really endeavored to be a church that was good news to the community. And we also partnered with Teen Challenge in our community, so we had a lot of people coming out of addictions and a lot of huge number of single moms and all sorts of people struggling with different issues. And it was amazing. It was beautiful to watch the church love our community and be there. The marginalized were welcomed, and they weren't just welcomed, they were honored and respected. I had the privilege at that time, I was working for the Salvation Army in the community, and so I was working with the homeless and the those that had not a lot of means, and I could joyfully refer them to different groups in our church, different
ministries.
And it was beautiful to watch.
You knew that they would be embraced rather than just tolerated.
I was remembering one particular woman that came in total crisis. Her story was really quite tragic, and we were able to immobilize just support in many different areas for her lodging and her kids in school, and there was passport issues and all kinds of issues. And then one Sunday in the midst of that, she came up while Mark was preaching and stood beside him, and another woman had come with her. And so Mark was wondering why she was standing there. And the woman beside her said, "She wants to be baptized right now." And Mark's like, "Okay, let me just finish my sermon." And we had water in the tank at that point.
Well, so you guys are always ready.
It was ready.
Awesome. And you Baptists are ready to rock.
And so at that point, Mark explained what was going on, and this woman shared her story and how we had come alongside her. And then it was just one of those beautiful Sundays. One of these young guys from Teen Challenge sort of leaped over pews and said, "Me too, me too." And I think we ended up baptizing five or six people that Sunday that said, "Yes, we want this."
That's
and
awesome.
It was, so many, I have so many stories of the church being the church.
That's a great story. Thank you. If you were giving advice, Sue and Cindy, you've got live congregations, maybe some people who might take a listen. but maybe some not in your own congregations. If you were to say to people who are part of local church communities, do you have any ways that you would say, "Hey, here's a great way to support those who are spouses of the people who are serving in a formal way"? How can people support the spouse?
Lots of meals. You can bring lots of meals over. Chocolate for Sue. I do feel like the real support. I say that to our girls all the time. Like, man, one of the amazing things is that we are prayed for and supported, and that is we feel it. We see it. So I would just say continue to pray. And I know, it's a special calling to be a pastor, but we're all called to be pastors and priests to each other. Mm-hmm. Right. So, we have high expectations of pastors, and sometimes they live up to them. Sometimes they don't, but, know there's always a story behind everything. And I think, one of the best ways to support is just to continue to pray and to, if you feel called to ask one of us, what is it specifically that we need? But I do feel very much supported and loved in this church family. And I think that probably lots of us can. So
Cheryl, before you answer the question in a general way, if you're talking to your students on your prayer course, good. And you say, "Here's a way that you should pray for those in leadership in a church," what would you say?
How to pray for leaders. Well, I think we should pray for everyone, first of all, that they're able to hear God's voice and know his heart, that they are, what we were talking about, authentic and real, that they have the support of the congregation and the honor and respect of the title, of the position, that it is a calling. It is, as David's term in the Bible, the Lord's anointed, and to respect that calling. So praying for and praying for the families. I loved that, not growing up in Christian heritage of having generations, to know my church family was praying for my kids was huge for me, because it wasn't part of our family tradition. So I'm not sure if I answered that.
That's okay.
No, that's good.
In a more generalized way, any other way of support?
Support. What Sue was mentioning, the criticism and complaining against pastors' wives, don't need to hear that. They've got their own criticisms and complaints. But also that protectiveness. So and don't put pastors and wives on a pedestal. They the ground is level at the cross, and we're all but don't put them in a pit either. That don't hold them to higher expectations. So grace, and more grace.
Bow Valley, these people are incredible. I think it was the pastors before us who paved the way for what we get to experience. I think that there are so many who initiate a text to how can we pray for you this week. Usually one of us will get one almost every day. I'm praying for you. How can I pray for you? But it's more than just saying it. Like, they're texting and then they're following up. Reaching out, that kind of thing. They also, the question is, how can they, ask me the question again?
If you're giving advice on how people can support pastors or you as a spouse, what would you say?
It's consistent with what we need. But for me, it's showing interest. Like, the word support to me is interest. Interested in our lives, interested in our family, who we are, what's going on. What did we do for the summer? Giving us a chance to be in community together, that's incredibly supportive. And so, like you, I love our church family, and I feel like I have great friends, and we have family friends, and we do things together, and we enjoy each other. And if we need support, often we don't have to ask because someone's already taken the initiative to do something. If we do need support, it's easy to say, hey, we need help, or this is happening, or we have our car broke down, and practical things, people are willing to offer help. Whatever you would want somebody to do for you, do it for your pastor.
That's good.
Ladies, thank you for being real with us and letting us in a little bit on a portion of your life, obviously not all. And I really appreciate hearing it from the other side, and hope that it'll be useful maybe to a few people who take a listen.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to The Real Podcast. For more information on this episode and others, check out our website at cochranalliance.com/real. Until next time, keep it real.